Friends, this is Joyce, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading another part from Piglet, The Unexpected Story of a Deaf-Blind Pink Puppy and His Family by Melissa Shapiro, veterinarian. And if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles and newsletters about the animals in our lives. We're going to start today's readings with Piglet by Melissa Shapiro. Previously, we learned that Melissa had been teaching Piglet various cues using the commands of a tap signal and other nonverbal cues. Today, we learn what else she did with Piglet. At approximately 3.5 months old, Piglet was progressing in all respects. His physical dexterity alone was remarkable, especially given how fast he was growing in size. This can often make puppies trip over their paws, which are too big for their bodies. But not this tiny one. He was growing not just in size, but in stamina and strength. The first picture I'd ever seen of Piglet had him on 1 pound. When he became our foster pup, he was already 1.5 pounds, and 2 weeks later he'd gained another 0.5 pound. At the end of April, he was 3.3 pounds. 2 weeks later, on May 8th, another visit with me to Norwalk Veterinary Hospital, I posted a picture of his handsomeness commencing. Weigh in today, 4.1 pounds. At this rate of gain, he's going to end up being a giant. A few weeks later was Mother's Day, 2017. Our family tradition for many years was to go hear Daniel play in Norwalk Youth Symphony's annual Mother's Day concert. When the kids were younger, we'd go over to Bama and Potts for brunch and then to the concert in the afternoon. In more recent years, we would just convene at the concert and then go out for dinner afterward. Ever since Piglet had appeared in our lives, the reality was that he needed to be with us most of the time, meaning no restaurant unless Warren and I took turns. This year, I had warned my mom that I wasn't sure about going out for dinner on Mother's Day. She understood that attending the concert was about all I could manage with logistics that had to be arranged for Piglet. If we tired him out earlier in the day, Piggy would sleep in the crate in the car, along with a couple of his dog sisters snoozing in their crates. But trying to go to a restaurant, that was pushing it. "We can all come back and we can eat here," Mom suggested on the phone. "I have enough food for everyone. Would you make a salad?" I laughed. My mother knew that if she was going to cook for everyone, that would usually mean not much to eat for the two vegans, Ellie and me. My mom didn't want to make me feel bad, adding quickly, "You make the best salads." She never had been able to figure out how my salads somehow taste better than the ones she gets from Costco. "I'd be happy to make a salad, Mom." My mom's problem-solving approach was always to come up with a plan to accommodate everyone. After teaching for over 50 years, 32 of those years for the Norwalk Public School System, along with the attainment of multiple advanced degrees and the receipt of more honors for her work than could be counted, what distinguished her was her knack for helping students thrive individually and making everyone in the class feel included. Mom had her own story of when the teacher is ready, the student appears. In her case, in the latter 1970s, her first response was, "I'm not ready." When her principal announced that they were starting a policy of immersion and she would have a new student with special needs in her class. The idea was to teach students with and without disabilities at the same academic educational level in the same classroom. Immersion was also seen as a form of inclusion. Students with and without disadvantage could learn from one another's daily challenges and advantages. The Norwalk Elementary School principal informed her, "Oh, yes, you are ready." Arlene Foodman immediately went to work to learn about accessibility and how best to adapt her classroom for her new third grade student with spina bifida, a condition that affects the spine and can make walking difficult, if not impossible. As my mother later described it, she and her student had a beautiful collaboration. My father was the one who told me. The newspapers covered the story, and long before your mother even knew it, her student and she were local pioneers helping change educational trends. My mother wasn't a crusader for a cause. She was a problem solver. If that student was going to be in her class, she excitedly pulled out all the stops to create the same opportunities for learning that she did for everyone else. The best teachers I learned from, for example, were her examples, are always educating themselves to better enable students at every level to succeed. Studying Piglet's changing profile before setting him down on the grass, I could see the puppy in him already giving way to the young dog man to come. Piglet's soft pink ears no longer obscured most of his brow like a nun's floppy hat. They lay on each side of his head as if they were pink wings picking up air current and settling off the cuteness of his face. His nose, that active GPS system, perched front and center on his face, had now grown into more of a canine profile. "Go pee," I said aloud, as I gave him a little tap to his right armpit. As Piglet took off on his own, I had a minute to inhale the day, a beautiful Sunday morning, while surveying the yard for the older members of our little dog group, who were busy running around the yard for the first of many outings that day. Warren followed me outside, watching Susie, Evie, Zoe, and Piglet enjoy the romp in the fresh-smelling spring air. The sun was already up and burning off the morning fog, although it had rained the day before and the grass was wet and a little slippery. We watched our resident den mother, Susie, hovering close to Piggy, who was being unusually rambunctious. Warren repeated his now familiar theory. "We never had a choice, you know. It was always Susie who wanted a brood." I smiled as I saw Susie approach Piglet, who was getting too close for comfort to a fence post. Piglet sensed her, slowed down and paused, and put his head up into the air. Instances like this one had already been making me wonder if maybe he had some minimal sight in his left eye after all, but I was pretty certain that at most he could only make out shadows. Multitasking as usual, Warren and I each scooped up poop, chatting as we planned out the afternoon events. Evie recently bathed, all white and fluffy, and one of the most good-natured and well-behaved doggies ever, came bounding over for a hug from Warren. He praised her, "Good girl, Evie," and gave her what had become her favorite massage on the underside of her neck. "Oh," Warren turned to me, "Happy Mother's Day," he added quickly. "I can get everyone fed and take them back into the backyard again, if you like, and you can relax, or go for a walk without the whole mob." We both laughed. I wasn't much of a relaxer. There was always too much to do. Besides, like our dogs, our birds, and our kids, I needed my routine. Just like counting, rounding this group up of four dogs, I counted Evie, Susie, Piglet, and... But that was only three. Where was Zozo? "Come on, Zozo," I called. "Time to go inside." Hearing that, Evie and Susie sped to the steps. Piglet, smelling them, I guessed, followed their trail to the base of the steps. "No, Zoe." I couldn't find her. Hearing a rustle behind me, I turned around to see the funny little chocolate chihuahua Yorkie Maltese Mix standing right behind me, looking at me innocently as if I'd never looked for her there. Even though this wasn't the height of acorn season, she had that look that she got whenever she had scooped up contraband she wasn't supposed to have. She was obsessed with finding and hoarding acorns, something she'd been doing since she was a pup. Early on, Zoe would pick them up, hide them in her mouth, and walk along nonchalantly, so I couldn't really tell. Eventually, I noticed that when she was walking next to me, her head would be held just a little bit forward with her nose pointed down, and that usually meant that she was hiding something. Our routine was for me to ask, "Do you have anything in your mouth?" and then follow it along with drawn out "drop," sort of singing it to her, and she would usually drop not just one, but multiple acorns at a time. Zoe had never swallowed or eaten any, but these acorns posed a serious choking hazard to a 6-pound dog. This time was only one large green acorn, and the message of "drop it" was the charm, another reminder of why this was one of the lessons I made sure to practice regularly with my dogs and highly recommended to all of my dog family clients. "Melissa, you don't want to miss this," Warren's voice was almost a stage whisper, as if some vibration in his projection or breath might distract Piglet. As soon as I looked in his direction, I saw what he was talking about. Piglet, that handsome pink boy, was intensely focused on pulling himself up like an inchworm from the slate at the base of the stairs up to the middle of the first step. All on his own, I hurried over, Zoe in my arms, and watched breathlessly as he made it to step one. Without pausing, he began to feel how much room he had before stretching up to the second step. Surely that was enough for the day. But no, he wanted to do it again, putting one tiny paw on the back of the step and then reaching up with the other paw before launching himself with his back legs. Handing Zozo to Warren, I stood next to Piglet to spot him if he slipped, but for the first time ever, didn't guide him with my hand on his back. Two steps. This was it. This was what I had taught him to do on a daily basis for weeks. He was using his memory of what he'd practiced doing independently. It was a supreme effort, yet his motion up the stairs accelerated. Warren had gone up to the top landing, and I was right behind Piglet, following up when, on the third step, his paw missed and he tripped. He caught himself before I had to grab him. Then he continued to the top. As Piglety hit the mat in front of the door, he did a grand victory dance, a twisty turn on the textured mat, or two for good measure, before placing his right foot on the door saddle. He lifted his chin in my direction as if to say, "What's next?" I almost cried. Warren was just excited as and proud of Piglet. On top of that, favorite dad didn't have to worry about doing anything more to make sure I had the best possible Mother's Day. And it was a grand celebration with all four of our babies, including our newest. May 2017, Westport Dog Festival. As much as I had begun to have a clear sense of what Piglet's mission was going to be, I honestly had very little knowledge about how to create meaningful momentum for it. Somewhere in my planning brain, I'm sure that I'd contemplated having him make public appearances as an example, say, of what people should support the work of rescue organizations like the one that saved Piglet's life. About a week before the Pink Boy's feat of going up the stairs on his own on Mother's Day, we were given our first opportunity for a public appearance. This coincided with a talk I'd agreed to give on pet safety at the second annual Westport Dog Festival. The year before, I'd been an exhibitor, and though I liked seeing fellow vets, there wasn't much foot traffic. But because this was a fundraiser for local animal rescue groups, I was happy to lend our support and decide to reserve a booth for the day. Informally, I could chat with members of the community who stopped by and learn of their pet needs. For those with aging animals, I could let them know about your senior pet's vet, along with the rest of my in-home veterinary services. My thought was to bring Piglet, have him hang out, interact a bit, and see how he did. Upon arrival, Warren and I struggled to get our booth's tent set up. We were not alone. As we discovered from vet friends from Winslow Park Veterinary Hospital, a vet practice located right next door to where the event was taking place, we were able to joke about how hard it was to pitch the tents as we set up for the day. As always, I had come prepared. That's what a house call vet does. For weeks, I had gathered materials, collecting all sorts of information, pamphlets about products and services available to senior pets, special harnesses, non-slip booties, ramps, orthopedic bedding, and pee pads. I had printed handouts that I used for my own clients that would go along with my prepared talk about pet safety. A few other vets also signed up to give a 30-minute talk about a variety of topics. In good company for the talk, I even made a pet safety poster, border, and all. In addition to Piglet, we also had brought Evie, my demo dog, whenever I did talks to a range of audiences. She loves children, especially, but is almost as fond of seniors. It was a veterinary workshop for kids. I'd show the kids how I put my stethoscope and listen to the heart and the lungs, how I checked her teeth and coat, and basically run down the main aspects of a typical physical exam. Evie posed, and she was polished in her posing, and she loved being the patient as well as socializing with the audience. It seemed like a good plan to me that Evie would be able to show Piggy the ropes of going out and being at a public event. Why I felt so nervous about how he might react to crowds of people, I just can't explain. But I had butterflies on that pink puppy's behalf. Just in case it was too much fun for him, I had all kinds of treats and food and blankets and a couple of toys to give him for when he needed downtime. I'd brought his little crate. At the start, Piglet sat contentedly on a blanket with Evie in the front of my partially shaded booth. As I talked to people and passed out information, the dog seemed delighted with the activity, though I watched the sun to be sure Piggy didn't get sunburned. Lots of people came by, and of course most were interested in learning about the tiny, deaf, blind, pink puppy. He was gracious and friendly. He really seemed happy to be there meeting new friends. Following Evie's lead, Piglet was in fine form. He was especially happy to meet many children who sat on the blanket with the two of them. At one point, appearing to have had enough, he went into his crate to take a nap. When it was time for my talk, I moved away from the spot in front of our booth and went into a little open area with benches to sit on, where I was greeted by a handful of spectators, mostly my vet clients. With a lot of competing noise in the background, I went through for my main pet topics on pet safety. I'd prepared, and then I turned the conversation over to Piglet. My client and longtime friend Pamela Clark was there to support my veterinary talk, but mostly to meet the tiny pink puppy. "I'm so glad you came," I interjected before starting my informal talk. "I wouldn't have missed it," she said, "and I had to meet the Piglet I've been seeing on social media." The first time we'd met, she had brought her dog, Alexis, and her one-year-old baby to the animal hospital in Stamford, where I worked. Many changes had gone on in our lives since those days. Pamela greeted Warren, who handed over the tiny pink boy. Piglet was so comfortable in her lap, she ended up holding him for the duration of the talk, which went well except for the sun in my eyes and some competing background noise. Piglety didn't mind. In fact, we had to peel him out of Pamela's arms when it was over. "Thank you again for coming," I said as she rose to leave. "We didn't really get to catch up." "Are you kidding? I wouldn't have missed it," Pamela explained. "I got to sit and hold Piglet and the deafblind pink puppy. I'll say that I knew him when." I laughed. The thought of him being famous or a public figure with a big following didn't register as real to me, although it was sweet that when we packed up and took our things to the car, a lot of the festival attendees were calling out, "Bye, Piglet!" And a little girl said, "I love you, baby Piglet!" He couldn't hear their words, but I was sure that the expression on her face, and on his face as well, was a giant smile. Even though I hadn't planned on it being anything special, Piglet's public debut at the Westport Dog Festival in May of 2017 was somewhat auspicious, giving me surprising clues about his comfort level in front of crowds. I'd had no idea that he would like interacting with the public so much or respond in the cool, relaxed way he had. Warren and I both saw it. Evie appeared to be the proud big sister, trotting along with us as we carried Piglet and my supplies to the car. She looked up at me and over at Piglet and gave me her white, fluffy head, shaking and assuring me, "Oh yeah, he's got that it factor. Just wait." Evie was right. Little could I have imagined how completely different Piglet's next opportunity to reach the public was going to be less than a month later. And that chapter is from Piglet, The Unexpected Story of a Deafblind Pink Puppy and His Family, written by Melissa Shapiro. Next week, we'll read Chapter 9, Dog Talk. Our next article is by Christelle Depret from the Best Friends Animal Sanctuary. The title, A Mustang's Breakthrough. Byron has come such a long way since he arrived at Best Friends Animal Sanctuary in the winter of 2021. The compact little Mustang has gained confidence and his worried, tense expression has melted from his face. He has easy access to food and water every day, and he's learning all about what it means to live in a human's world. Byron spent his first 5 years in the wild, where life can be challenging. The high desert climate is harsh. Food and water are scarce, and predators are ever present. Byron survived by reacting without thinking, which kept him alive but made it difficult for him to be around people. To acclimate to life around humans, Byron would have to overcome many of the instincts he'd honed during his life in the desert. Horse trainer and horse learn new ways. Equine trainer Christian Matthews has a similar story. He grew up around horses, learning the methods taught by his grandfather for cowboying and ranching. He says he wanted to work at Best Friend's Horse Haven to learn gentler, more compassionate ways to handle horses. That's how he met Byron. Christian learned to interact with horses in a whole new way. For example, it's better to go slow than to go fast. Getting Byron comfortable with saddling took months, but that's what he needed to feel safe. The way I was raised to train horses, the saddling process took 1 or 2 weeks, Christian says. But just as Byron was beginning to let go of tension, Christian was learning to manage his expectations, to allow the horse to think rather than taking shortcuts to get the desired behavior. This method trains the mind before the body, which results in the horses not doing things as fast as other methods, explains Christian. But when they do them, they are confident, composed, and relaxed. Byron becomes a riding partner. Now Byron has progressed to being ridden, and while it's still new to him, he's proving how capable he can be as a riding partner. He's even helping other horses in their training. Recently, Christian went on a trail ride with a staff member who was riding another horse. The other horse was scared and nervous, so they put Byron in front and let him lead. Taking cues from Byron, the other horse began to calm down. He went from being an emotional wreck to being other horses' emotional support blanket. Watching this transformation, Christian says, has been an incredible experience. He says the most important lesson Byron has taught him is to have faith in the process, be patient, and allow the relationship between horse and handler to grow naturally. As for Byron, we're going to keep working with him in a slow and compassionate way, Christian says. If we keep that up with him or with any horse we work with, the sky is the limit. This article, A Mustang's Breakthrough, was written by Christelle Del Pret. Allison Cochiara writes, A Grumbly Bunny's Life-Changing Friendship. Sometimes making friends gets trickier with age, whether you're a person or a bunny. As kids, it can be as easy as spotting someone on the playground and saying hi. But for Martin, a small black and white adult rabbit with a big personality, finding a friend was anything but simple. Bossy Bunny. Martin arrived at the bunny house at Best Friend's Animal Sanctuary alongside his brother, Steve. Cute? Undeniably. Social? Not exactly. The two didn't get along, and despite hopes that neutering would mellow their rivalry into brotherly bonding, Martin just wasn't having any of it. Because rabbits are naturally social creatures, the hope was that Martin could find comfort either with a different bunny companion or with people. But Martin wasn't keen on either, at least not at first. His caregivers noticed that Martin's body language was a little bossy, assertive in a way that confused other rabbits. If he nibbled at a bunny and they responded like most bunnies would, they weren't happy about it. Martin often took the wrong way, and things escalated. Still, the bunny house team kept trying. One by one, they introduced Martin to the potential companions with all sorts of personalities. 8 bunnies in total, and not a single match. Until Jared. Bunny besties. Jared came to the sanctuary after a kind person found him hopping around her backyard. Calm and curious and easygoing, he seemed to get along with just about everyone. And somehow, that included Martin. From their very first meeting, something shifted. When Martin gave Jared a little nibble, Jared didn't get upset. He simply asked for grooming sessions instead. Martin obliged, and just like that, a friendship bloomed. Even better, Jared's steady presence helped Martin grow more comfortable with people. He even started to sploot. That sweet, stretched-out bunny sprawl that only happens when a rabbit feels truly at ease. For a bunny who once struggled to make a single friend, Martin has found something steady, soft, and true. And that makes all the difference. This article by Allison Cochiara, A Grumbly Bunny's Life, Changing Friendship. And here is our sidebar for today. Understanding the human-animal bond. The relationship between humans and pets is unlike any other. For thousands of years, animals have been our companions, helping us in numerous ways, from hunting and herding to providing comfort and companionship. Their bond has evolved, creating a unique emotional connection that allows pets to tune in to their owner's feelings. Studies have shown that pets, particularly dogs and cats, are remarkably adept at reading human body language and vocal tone. They can sense our emotions through subtle cues such as facial expressions and posture. When you come home from a long day, your dog may greet you with a wagging tail and playful barks, while your cat may curl up beside you, sensing your fatigue. This instinctive empathy is a key part of the bond we share with our pets. Dogs have been shown to respond to human emotions by releasing oxytocin, the same love hormone that bonds mothers to children. That's understanding the human-animal bond. Well, that brings us to the conclusion of today's Animal Companions. I do hope you enjoyed the readings, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories on the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Until then, this is Joyce for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.